The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today from kidspiritonline.com, The Psychology of Humor. This article was written by Varshini Arunachalam on July 15th. Knock, knock. Who's there? Well, it's your friendly companion, laughter. Laughter and humor have both become essential components of our daily lives. More than just providing brief relief from the hurdles and stresses we may face, they play a vital role in enhancing relationships and are often the building blocks for emotional resilience. Laughter may also be an evolutionary mechanism, enhancing the quality of our lives one chuckle at a time. Breaking down a giggle. Before delving into laughter's role in our psychological and emotional well-being, we must first understand the science behind laughter. The dictionary definition of humor states that it is a mood or state of mind, and the quality of being amusing or comic. However, most scientists and psychologists concur that humor is more complex. The scientific study of laughter and its influence on the body and mind is conducted under a branch of science known as gelotology, which examines both the biological and psychological functions of laughter. This is primarily due to the many forms laughter takes and how it is provoked by a myriad of incidents, which vary from individual to individual. Laughter is also different from humor, occurring when the body enacts a physiological response to humor and is defined as the spontaneous sounds and movements of the face and body that are the instinctive expressions of lively amusement and sometimes also of derision. The main neurological process that occurs is carried out by your body's control center, the brain. First, your prefrontal cortex on your frontal lobe must process humor and interpret it, identifying an appropriate time for laughter. Second, the limbic system, from the Latin word limbus, meaning border or edge, is the brain's emotional center, triggering positive feelings and inducing good moods. Last, your motor cortex, also located within the frontal lobe of your brain, regulates the physical expression of laughter, contributing to noises, chuckles, along with gestures or movement. In the course of this process, the body also releases chemical messengers known as neurotransmitters, including endorphins, which provide a sense of euphoria, and dopamine, which is linked to pleasure and reward. Laughing away the tension. Moreover, laughter's benefits extend well beyond amusement. When you laugh, your body releases chemicals that relax you and allow you to function better by reducing the level of stress hormones, such as cortisol, which can make you anxious and cause high blood pressure and a compromised immune system. Laughing releases endorphins as well, which are natural stress and pain relievers. That is why after a long, stressful, and arduous day, simply watching an engaging comedy or chatting with someone particularly humorous provides you with relief. In addition, according to Science Daily and the National Institutes of Health, NIH, laughter stimulates the release of nitric oxide, which relaxes blood vessels, increasing blood flow and reducing your blood pressure. PubMed Central's studies also show that laughter increases immune cells and infection-fighting antibodies, improving your disease resistance and making you less susceptible to illness. Laughter is indeed the best medicine. Bouncing back with a smile. Laughter can also make us more emotionally resilient, which can improve our ability to bounce back from challenges. People who use humor as a way of coping with stress enjoy improved mental health, self-esteem, and emotional control. It has also been found that the ability to find humor in unfavorable situations helps reframe thoughts and shift perspectives, along with relieving emotional tension or distress. Laughter and humor also allow us to pull back from negative emotions, and this often helps to break problems down, put them into perspective, and make them seem more manageable and less overwhelming. Humor has also been proven to reduce symptoms of depression and anxiety, along with combating stress and tension, like a natural antidepressant. By stimulating the release of hormones such as dopamine and endorphins, laughter produces feelings of pleasure and calm, which are effects extremely similar to those of antidepressant medications. Furthermore, a PubMed study titled Beneficial Effect of Laughter Therapy on Physiological and Psychological Function in Elders shows that laughter therapy can significantly reduce symptoms of depression and anxiety, especially in clinical and elderly populations. Laughter's accessibility and simplicity make it a powerful and affordable tool in promoting mankind's mental well-being. But why do we laugh? To answer this question, many famous scientists have formulated a wide range of theories. Let's start by looking at the evolutionary perspective to this question. Laughter is a powerful nonverbal tool and can communicate emotions including friendliness, acceptance, joy, or submission within groups and packs of any size. According to a PubMed article titled The Social Life of Laughter, laughter is mediated strongly by social context, and humans are 30 times more likely to laugh if they are with someone else than if they are on their own. This supports the possible theory that laughter serves purposes reaching far beyond amusement and plays an important role in bonding, which could reach back as far as early human tribes and hunter-gatherer societies. Moreover, in tense or stressful situations, laughter also serves as a metaphorical barrier or peacekeeping mechanism that reduces confrontation and resolves conflicts. For example, in group dynamics, if a dominant individual joins the laughter, the situation seems less threatening. Through a psychological lens, the three main historical theories of humor are the incongruity, superiority, and relief theories. The incongruity theory, put simply, suggests that we laugh when our expectations or social norms that we have accepted are disrupted in surprising or clever ways. An example of this is illustrated by American comedian Dimitri Martin's joke, "I'm sorry and I apologize mean the same thing, unless you're at a funeral." The superiority theory plays off the belief that we laugh at others' misfortunes, and this makes us feel superior. In popular media, we see this often in comedy shows or stand-up specials where comedians often make jokes about clumsy or awkward encounters, or use self-deprecating humor. Finally, the relief theory states that humor provides a release for emotional tension, especially when faced with stressful situations. An example of this is how laughter erupts when we're being tickled. In laughter we trust. According to famous comedian Charlie Chaplin, a day without laughter is a day wasted. Although laughter poses numerous benefits, if we hope to reap and enjoy them, we must intentionally embrace humor in our lives. This could be as simple as watching a funny movie with friends, recalling inside jokes that lighten the mood, or doing your best to find comedy in everyday inconveniences. After all, science says that even in classrooms or workplaces, humor can build rapport and ease tension. By taking the time to find the joy in our everyday lives and accepting humor as a break, we are more able to switch our mindsets, connect with others, and develop resilience. So, the next time you find yourself overwhelmed, a hearty laugh might be the mental reset your mind craves. Our next article from KidSpiritOnline.com, Learning to Fail. This article was written by Sophia Shakura Farr on April 23rd. So, here's the thing. I've never really been a sucker for success. I've spent all my life worrying about other things, things I'm not even going to mention. It would take me at least another 3 pages to explain it. Instead, I've been worrying of being a failure, of disappointing others. I've spent my whole life scared that I'm going to fail, scared people will never like me again if I do. I seriously had a panic attack when I accidentally broke a vase in my house. It was $30 on Amazon. And when I do something amazing, when I do succeed, I'm so brain dead from stressing out about it so much that I can't even enjoy the praise without feeling bad. I often tell myself, why did I stress so much? This should have been easier. Look how carefree everyone else seems. Blame it on my parents and their oh-so-wonderful parenting styles. Blame it on society that deems everyone less than perfect, pathetic. Blame it on whatever. I don't care. Today, I'm here to talk about why I changed my state of mind. It was summertime, and I was sitting at home with nothing to do. Just like all the other days in summer, I was alone and very, very, very bored. I tried video games, board games, all the games. Nothing helped to quench my thirst for mental engagement. So I decided to go over to my parents' shop. It's a nice little pottery shop where people can come in and paint. I work there every summer, and yes, I get paid. Very cool, I know. We used to live right down the street from it, and I'd go whenever I felt so helpless that the only thing I could do was work. Usually, the employees made me do menial tasks that no one else wanted to do, like cleaning the wet dishes. I remember the awkward feeling of having glazing paint on my hands, how it would clump up and disperse as I washed each painting plate. I really enjoyed doing it at the time, and it often helped me with my constant stress and desire to never disappoint the staff. Now that I look back on it, that's probably one of the only things that made me want to keep going back. The shop manager was there. I'm not going to tell you her name. Privacy matters, you know. But she was the best. I'm so sure she's the only reason we made money in that place. Anyway, She was taking pots out of the kiln. She saw me when I entered the shop and smiled. It's a beautiful type of smile. The type of smile that makes you feel like everything is going to be okay. I went inside, and it wasn't all too busy. I don't mean to brag, but I was a pretty good worker. I was 11, but I still thought I was the powerhouse of the entire shop. I had a bit of an ego. She told me she needed to go home and get something, and she thought it was a good idea to leave a tween in charge of a shop with two people inside. I told her I'd indeed be fine. I was indeed not. I swear on the heavens, the second she got in her car and drove away, 20 people came inside. I even remember the order. First was a family of four, with one toddler and one newborn. Then came this really nice old couple, a group of 6 teenagers who looked so mean, but were actually super duper nice. And then 2 packs of women in their 20s. It was crazy. You see, I looked like I was older because I was wearing a mask and developed early for my age. But that does not mean I was old. It didn't help that I acted mature for my age, so people often thought I was in college when I was not. One of the 20-something-year-old women bumped into me while I was carrying plates of paint to another table. She then proceeded to yell her butt off, like that's the most reasonable thing to do. I tried to explain to her that it was organic, water-based paint, which could wash off with water, but she refused to listen. This whole time, I was so scared I was going to make a huge mess of things, and my manager would be so disappointed in me, so I kind of just caved in and went to the back to cry. One of the other customers berated the young woman, and she was shamed into leaving with her friends. Then the old lady came to the back and gave me a hug. It was nice. It was nicer than nice. It was the type of hug I always wanted, the type of hug my mom wishes she could give me. She helped me feel better until the manager came back. When I saw her, I thought she was going to scream at me, like yell at me about how stupid I am and how I should have just managed on my own, that it wasn't hard because she could do it and I should be better. But she apologized for leaving me alone. She told me that she should have never left me and that just because I act mature does not mean she should have dumped that role on me. I don't know. It felt nice, being treated like a child for once. People always expected me to be better, and so I did, because I couldn't be anything less than. Honestly, I don't think an adult had ever apologized to me until then. I think grown people often forget that children are human, that they do, in fact, feel the same things adults do. It's so much worse since kids haven't figured out how to deal with it yet. I felt my heart swell, like I was going to explode from that feeling of acceptance and understanding. It was gut-wrenching, and it felt so cruel because I knew then and there I wasn't ever going to experience something like this ever again. And I haven't. She bought me a sandwich from the bakery next door, and then I went home and watched Ninjago until my parents came back home. They berated me for being lazy all day, even though I worked for a good 4 hours. I didn't care, though, because I learned that it was okay to act like a kid sometimes. I realized that day I shouldn't be worried about going to work for 9 hours straight because I'd feel useless if I didn't. I realized that worrying about these things would get me nothing but stress. I also realized I had parents that didn't know how to say, I'm proud of you. After that, I wouldn't say my anxiety went away or my mature activities stopped. I would say, though, that I realized how messed up it was, and I didn't feel much pride from it. I just felt that they were things I had to do to survive. I didn't worry as much if I failed, because I know that failing is what people do sometimes. Failing is just a form of learning, and failing is definitely not something that deserves panic attacks. It's okay to look in the mirror one day and tell yourself, hey, I don't feel like doing anything today. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. Stephanie Pacheco on becoming U.S. National Youth Poet Laureate and advice for teen writers everywhere. This article was written by Anshi Purohit on July 26th. Stephanie Pacheco serves as the 2024-2025 U.S. National Youth Poet Laureate. This title recognizes writers who use their words to spark social change and inspire activism. A young person from the South Bronx, Stephanie has established quite an impressive trailblazing platform. After serving as New York City Youth Poet Laureate in 2022 and being inaugurated as New York State Poet Laureate in 2023, Stephanie went on to perform at the Apollo Theater, Kennedy Center, and at UN Week with the Clinton Global Initiative. Pacheco also visits school-aged students embarking on a mission to inspire the nation's future creatives, embarking on a transformative writing journey. From decoding ciphers with friends in middle school to analyzing powerful verses in English class, Stephanie explored writing at a young age. I remember the first day that I performed a poem and went up to a podium at an event in the South Bronx with a whole bunch of other high school students. I was up there with my papers, shaking in hand, but I remember the feeling of performing my poetry for the first time and being listened to by a whole crowd of people. And I realized then just how the poem can shift a room. Although public speaking was not her most familiar outlet, finding direction through stories in an unpredictable world grew Stephanie's confidence. Her writing became a spark that could captivate an audience. Many of her pieces relate to her identity, cultural roots, family values, and the spaces she has called home. It feels like I'm getting the opportunity to elevate those same poems about my community, about my blackness, about being Latina, about my womanhood, about being from the South Bronx, Pacheco said. I feel like I've been getting the opportunity to raise them to this larger platform, and that has been such an amazing honor. Immediately, I wish that every one of us had that, because every one of us deserves to be able to tell our stories. Connecting with community and activism. Connection unites all poets and their communities, bridging geographical and emotional divides. I think my favorite part of every poetry performance is the people that it points me to, Pacheco said. I'll have people come up to me, sometimes in tears, sometimes I'm crying with them, and having them be like, this is my story too, and I never thought I'd see it be told on a stage. Poetry took Stephanie to Kolkata, India, where she spoke with them about her life, sharing her creative pieces. To her surprise, the students in India resonated with her words and were encouraged to share their dreams. A community sprouted from those poems and their verses, which encompassed two vastly different countries. This way, Stephanie believes art and activism sustain each other in a world often bogged down by statistics. While defeat and overwhelm are common byproducts when faced with injustice, writing can uplift and empower. Daily life is exhausting, but poetry offers some respite. It is so easy to get burned out and to get discouraged, but I think that's when artists come in and remind us all that, no, we must keep believing in the thing that we haven't seen yet, because if we stop believing it, that's when it no longer exists, Pacheco said. Sources of inspiration. Of course, such a talented writer must have incredible sources for inspiration. Stephanie rediscovers her creative muse by attuning herself to life's underlying rhythm. In her free time, she enjoys learning about history and going down YouTube rabbit holes watching spoken word poetry performances. Following her advice, every conversation has value and can kickstart a compelling narrative. I'm so inspired by everyone who has come before me, and I am also challenged by that history, she says. In particular, Stephanie recommends Denise Froman, Jive Poetic, and poets who have performed at the Brave New Voices International Poetry Festival. Advice for aspiring young writers. In times of uncertainty, Pacheco encourages other youth writers to express themselves and push themselves out of their comfort zones. Every writer should seize the opportunity to raise their voice. Indescribable feelings move us to write and share our aspirations. These emotions are what propel humanity and optimism forward. Do it scared. Write the poem, even if the content of it scares you. Go to the poetry slam, even if you've never performed your poems on stage before. Post your work, even if you're afraid of your mom finding it, or your school friends finding it, and thinking that you're dorky or weird. Everything you are dreaming of is on the other side of that fear. Keep up with Stephanie. If you would like to follow Stephanie's social media or keep up with her latest work, you can find her on Instagram at the Stephanie Pacheco. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.